Question Madison 2017, back at it again, ripping up the mic, tearing up the airways. Here we go, questioning medicine. It is Halloween. It is Halloween right now, actually. And this past weekend, I went to a costume party. And this was not your ordinary costume party. Oh, no, no, no. This was supreme. This was mucho undo. This was the grand finale. The winner of the costume party, the couple who was the winner of the costume party, won a 5 days, 4 night cruise to the Caribbean. I sadly did not win. We did not win, actually. I shouldn't put that on me. Maybe it was her fault. Maybe she is why we didn't win the couple's costume party. I don't know. Just maybe. But anyways, at this costume party, there was a palm reader and a card reader. And now, I've never done this before. This was all new to me in a private room, and she reads your vibes, and she has incense and myrrh and all this candles and lighting. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. Hocus pocus, magic, tocus, what? How is she going to know me? It turns out she was good. She was really good. I don't know if she could just tell by the way I moved my feet or the way I don't know. I have no idea. All I know is she was good. But then it got me thinking, with the Halloween spirit around, spooky, crawly spiders and stories and freaky, gruely goblins, it is time that I do a little bit of my own predicting the future, a little bit of my own questioning medicine, a little bit of my own change in where I think the guidelines will change too. So without further ado, without any questioning, without any reservation, any hesitation, let's get it started. Question Medicine 2017, here we go.
I ain't afraid of no ghosts. I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
All right, here we go. I am Andrew Bilt, and I am down here in sunny St. Petersburg, Florida. And as I said in the beginning, this is Questioning Medicine 2017. All right. As I said in the opening, this is going to be a podcast where I'm going to predict the future. And I'm going to predict the future like I've done before in this podcast, because here's a secret. Too many people out there are already saying, this is the change in medicine. This is the change in the guidelines. This is going to be happening. This should be the standard of care. Now, it may not be the standard of care at your facility, but that's only because you haven't mentioned it yet. It should be the standard of care at your facility, whether you are inpatient or outpatient. This podcast is for you, and this is one that you need to know about. And what am I talking about? What am I referring to? Well, let me inform you. Let me let you in on a little secret. You see, up to 1 in 10 patients undergoing PCI, or cardiac cath with stents, percutaneous intervention have atrial fibrillation. Now, the use of triple therapy is common in the clinical practice. 1 in 4 older patients with atrial fibrillation who have had an acute myocardial infarction receives triple therapy. Although, here's the problem, with every up comes a down, and triple therapy may minimize the risk of stent thrombosis and ischemic events, it is obviously not without its faults, and it's caused an increase in association risk with fatal and non-fatal bleeding. The most common bleeding is being GI, but that's still buying you a bed in the hospital, that's still getting you a night stay where you're seeing a friendly physician. It's still getting you terrible hospital food. It's certainly not what you want. And you might be saying to yourself, how bad can this risk of bleeding be? How bad can it really be? Well, let me tell you, if you're on triple therapy, it is nearly 4 times as high as the risk with just warfarin therapy alone. And the risk of intracranial hemorrhage that is about 2 times as high as if you were just on dual antiplatelet therapy alone. Those are some pretty big numbers. Now, we need to be educated so we can have the shared decision-making conversation. And until recently, well, until the last few years, actually, there was limited randomized data investigating antithrombotic co-prescription. Current guidelines are therefore based on expert opinion and the extrapolation of non-randomized data. And now, if you listen to this podcast long enough, you know how I feel about expert opinion. It stands for extra sheet. Terrible. I hate it. I don't think it has a role, actually, in guidelines, because too much of guidelines has medical legal, we follow them. It shouldn't be based on any experts anywhere, but that is neither here nor there, and I digress. Well, the combination of antiplatelet and anticoagulation is more common than I think we all want to believe. Actually, 1/5 of patients presenting with atrial fibrillation will subsequently require coronary intervention, and up to 1/5 of acute coronary syndromes, myocardial infarctions, ST elevations, will then develop atrial fibrillation. 1/5, 1/5, they're working with each other. 1/5 plus 1/5 is equal to 2/5? That's a lot of fifths. The moral of the story is, it's common and we need to know what to do. But times are changing and they should be changing in your facility or in your follow-up in the clinic. Let's get into some of the evidence. Now, I think before we get there, something that needs to be said is that this is maybe an obvious, but maybe bringing in a fact that not everyone knows. I think we should all be, obviously, when you have AFib, be calculating the CHADS VASC score. CHADS VASC score is what I'm using. I think it's what everybody is using. It is better than CHADS. There's a couple, not even recent anymore, studies on that. I know some guidelines are saying CHADS or CHADS VASC, or they don't specify. However, I'm telling you, I'm using CHADS VASC. I think you should be using CHADS VASC. What does it stand for? I could go about it in this podcast. What does it all mean? But just go to MD Calc and put it in. It's not that big of a deal, really. Just trust me on this one. CHADS VASC is where it's at. And the patients in the cohort that used to develop the CHADS VASC score were prescribed antiplatelet drugs in 74% of the cases. And so this provides a reasonable estimation of the annual stroke risk for patients already prescribed an antiplatelet drug, which is what we're essentially doing with this triple therapy. And then in contrast, I think we should all be using, if you're not using, the HasBLED score, which is again, looking at the risk of bleeding and versus the risk of coagulation. Now, only 7.1% of the cohort used to develop the HasBLED score were co-prescribed an antiplatelet and oral anticoagulation. So again, this doesn't necessarily reflect the patient population that we're seeing or sitting right there in front of us. Now it's time to get onto the evidence. There are three trials. Yes, that is right, three trials. The most recent trial just out in October. Yes, that's right, this month, less than 2 weeks ago. But let's not start at the end. Let's quickly review the beginning. Let's start at the beginning and work our way down, because if you don't know where you're at, how can you know where you've been? Maybe I messed that saying up. You don't know where you've been, you don't know where you're at, where you go. You know what I'm saying. Let's start from the top and work from there. First, we have the WOST trial. This was the WOST trial in The Lancet, 2013. The title was Use of Clopidogrel with or without aspirin in patients taking oral anticoagulant therapy and undergoing percutaneous coronary intervention, an open label randomized controlled trial. Now, again, I'm going to name all these trials. If you want these trials in paper form because you can't get access to them, you can email us, questioningmedicine@gmail.com. You can email me, andrewbilt@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter, which is probably the easiest and the quickest, @andrewbilt. So the WOST trial, what it looked to answer was, in patients on oral anticoagulation undergoing PCI, does the using clopidogrel alone, or Plavix alone, reduce the risk of bleeding compared with clopidogrel plus aspirin? Now, this was a multi-center, open-label, randomized controlled trial. They had just over 560 patients. About 280 were randomized to double therapy, 280 randomized to triple therapy. At 1 year follow-up, bleeding events were lower in the double therapy group, 20% versus 44%. For those of you that are good at math or not good at math, that's a number needed to treat of 4. That's pretty freaking awesome. Now, that was driven by reductions in minor bleeding. But minor bleeding, major bleeding, it's still bleeding. It's still significant if you're bleeding. And when you have a number needed to treat of 4, even minor bleeding is pretty unbelievable. The combined secondary endpoint, which is the all too common, all too frequent cardiovascular endpoint of death, MI, revascularization, stroke, and stent thrombosis was also lower in the double therapy group, 11% versus 17%. That's a number needed to treat of 15. Now, interestingly, all-cause mortality was lower in the double therapy group, which was driven by pretty much a non-cardiac mortality. So maybe patients were just dying in, or not dying in car accidents as much. I don't think you can really tease it out, but it's an interesting statistic. You just need to know that it was non-cardiac mortality. So if you're really going to say that aspirin or Plavix or that these are cardiac drugs, then that decrease in mortality was probably not likely to the drugs. Now, just after that one study, boom, here we go, updates to the guidelines. You go updates to the guidelines, 2014, the AHAA, the ACC, and the HRS, the American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology, boom, 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 here we go, guidelines for the management of patients with atrial fibrillation, executive summary, and then later that same year, they release the 2014, again, AHA, ACC, HRS guideline for management of patients with atrial fibrillation. That was released in December. Here's what you need to know. Both the executive summary and then the final guidelines released in December, they said, and I'm quoting, following coronary revascularization in patients with atrial fibrillation and a CHADS-VASc score, again, there it is, CHADS-VASc, that's what you should be using if you're not, and a CHADS-VASc score of 2 or greater, it may be reasonable to use clopidogrel with oral anticoagulants, but without aspirin. Level of evidence B. There you go. They said it right there. All right, so now here we go. Fast forward, and now we're on to the second paper, the second article, and this is the Pioneer AF PCI study. This was published in the New England Journal of Medicine 2016. The title of the paper was Prevention of Bleeding in Patients with Atrial Fibrillation Undergoing PCI. The big take-home question here was, among patients with non-valvular AFib undergoing PCI with stent placement, does low-dose rivaroxaban plus either single or dual antiplatelet therapy reduce risk of bleeding when compared to warfarin plus dual antiplatelet therapy? This is a big trial because prior to the publication of this study, the Pioneer AF PCI, there was no, zero, nilch, nada clinical trials to support the use of DOACs in patients with non-valvular AFib undergoing PCI with stent placement. So let's look at some of the details of this groundbreaking Pioneer. You get it? Pioneer, the word pioneer. All right, anyways, Pioneer study. They randomized just over 2,200 patients with non-valvular AFib who had just undergone PCI with stent placement to one of three different groups. You were either giving rivaroxaban, 10 to 15 milligrams daily, plus a P2Y12 inhibitor for 12 months. You were getting rivaroxaban 2.5 milligrams twice a day plus dual antiplatelet therapy for 1, 6, or 12 months. Or you were getting warfarin plus dual antiplatelet therapy for 1, 6, or 12 months. The primary outcome was clinically significant bleeding. At 12 months, the primary outcome of clinically significant bleeding was lower in the rivaroxaban groups than in the warfarin group, 16%, 18%, and 27% respectively. And then bleeding that required medical attention, again, lower in the rivaroxaban groups. Didn't matter which one you were done or which one you were randomized to. We're looking at 15%, 16%, and 23%. And in case you're playing along at home, both of the rivaroxaban groups were statistically significant for less bleeding than the warfarin group. Now, you might be saying, Andrew, I've listened to you talk before. With every up comes a down, with every bad comes an in, with every out comes an up, with every time the ocean goes out, it must come back in. When the ball goes up, it must come down, and hopefully not land on the turf. But what's we must be having with less bleeding must mean we have increased cardiovascular mortality, increased MIs, increased stroke. Tell me it's so. Tell me it ain't so, Johnny. Well, there was no significant difference in the rate of major adverse cardiovascular events between the three groups, but the trial was not powered to detect a difference between those groups. However, when you look at them, we're looking at all about 6% no matter what group you're in. So it likely there was no difference, although, again, not powered to necessarily find that. You might also notice that the 15 milligrams and the 2.5 BID is less than the normal 20 milligrams we would use for thromboembolism or stroke prophylaxis. Now, on to the big boy of them all. That was the second one. On to the third one, the one that just came out about 2 weeks ago, the one that you may not have even read yet. You might be hearing it here first on Question Medicine for the first time, and that's okay because this is the conversation. I think this is now the third trial that is saying this is what needs to happen, and if it's not happening in your facility, if it's not happening in your follow-up, if it's not happening with your cardiologist, then after listening to this podcast, I think that's on you, because I think the evidence is out there now that it's time to start having this discussion. And here we go. This is a Big Mac Daddy of them all. Stretch out if you are not ready for this one mentally. This is New England Journal of Medicine 2017, right now, October 19th, dual antiplatelet therapy with dabigatran after PCI in atrial fibrillation. This was a multi-center trial which randomized just over 2,700 patients with atrial fibrillation who had undergone PCI. Patients had received either standard antithrombotic treatment for the PCI procedure, meaning if your hospital normally gives heparin drips, they were going to heparin drips, Lovenox, whatever the cardiologists want, it was just the standard. That was hospital standard. But after the PCI, patients who were eligible for the trial were enrolled in the trial were randomly assigned to receive one of three different treatments. They either had dual therapy with dabigatran, 110 milligrams twice daily, plus clopidogrel or ticagrelor, dual therapy with dabigatran, 150 milligrams twice daily, plus either clopidogrel or ticagrelor, or triple therapy with warfarin plus aspirin, and then either clopidogrel or ticagrelor. Now, in the triple therapy group, aspirin was discontinued after 1 month in patients in whom a bare metal stent was implanted, and after 3 months in patients whom a drug-eluting stent was implanted. The primary endpoint was the first or clinically relevant non-major bleeding event. A secondary endpoint was a composite endpoint of thromboembolic events. Again, the cardiologist's oh-so-popular endpoint. Myocardial infarction, stroke, systemic embolism, death, or unplanned revascularization. They also looked at coronary artery bypass grafting, or how many times the patient had to go back to PCI. Other secondary endpoints included a combined endpoint of thromboembolic events or death. Anyways, they were looking at all kinds of MACE or major adverse cardiovascular events, as well as, I just heard this one today, I think it was CRACE, critically cardiovascular events. It was on ERCast, if you want to go listen to that one with Mike Weinstock. Great little piece, great little number. And I just heard it today, CRACE, but I can't think of what it stands for anymore. Anyways, go listen to it. ERCast, Rob Orman, shout out to you. Keep doing what you're doing. Back to the evidence. The incidence of primary outcome, or the primary endpoint, which, again, was the first major or clinically relevant non-major bleeding event, was 15% in the 110 milligram dabigatran group, compared with 27% in the triple therapy group. That was statistically significant and superior. Not only non-inferior, it was superior. And it was 20% in the 150 milligram dual therapy group, as compared to 25 or 26% in the corresponding triple therapy group. This met non-inferiority, but was not, or did not meet, superiority. And again, I know what you're thinking. I know what's pondering in your mind. It's what I say all the time. What goes up must come down. What goes in must go out. With every good comes the bad. With every cute, cuddly puppy comes a dog that's just going to pee and poop all over your floor. Oh, yes, there is no good in life without a little bit of bad. There is no sun without a little bit of moon. But the incidence of the composite endpoint, the thromboembolic events, the myocardial infarction, the strokes, the embolic embolism, death, unplanned revascularization was 14% in the two dual therapy groups, the dabigatran plus the clopidogrel or ticagrelor, and also about 14% in the triple therapy group with warfarin, meaning there was no real difference in these thromboembolic events. So to recap, no difference in the bad events, thromboembolic events, but definitely a difference in the other bad events, the bleeding events. This was titled, this paper that I'm talking about that just came out October 19th, 2017, was titled the Redual PCI trial. It is now the third direct head-to-head comparison of dual therapy with triple therapy. Similar to the previous trials, it shows a significantly lower risk of bleeding with dual therapy and no apparent major increase in ischemic or major adverse cardiovascular events. Now, there's an editorial that goes along with this, and if you can get access to it, I have access that I will be happy to mail to you, but you should read it because they did something I find so awesome, is that they performed an informal meta-analysis in the editorial of all three previous trials. And they used certain methods I'm not going to go into on this, but they showed that the odds of major and minor bleeding with dual therapy are half the odds with triple therapy. Half the risk, if you will. The risk of bleeding is clearly lower with dual therapy than with triple therapy. And we also have to say that although this sounds so good, there is one big drawback. None of these trials, zero, zilch, zada, nada, zero, no single trial has been adequately powered to completely rule out an increase in ischemic events with dual therapy versus triple therapy. The meta-analysis suggests that the risk of major adverse cardiovascular events is not higher with the dual therapy than with a triple therapy, but again, none of the individual trials are actually powered to find that. However, I think we now know, with all three trials pretty much coming out and saying the exact same thing, it is time to start having this conversation. And there you have it. Atrial fibrillation with PCI, which will happen in about 1 in every 10 patients, or 1/5 of patients that have AFib will get PCI, and 1/5 of those patients that go to PCI will then develop AFib, should likely be on dual therapy instead of triple therapy. This is new, and I can tell you this is already happening in some institutes, or at a very minimum, the conversation is being had about doing this, and especially on the high-risk patients, or those that are at high risk of bleeding, those that have had bleeding events in the past. This is a conversation that needs to be being had, and now you know, and now you should be having that conversation. So the next time you see this, or the next time this happens, please bring it up with the cardiologist and ask him or her their feelings and see what they think about the evidence that is now laid out in the WOST trial, the Pioneer trial, and the Redual trial. Three trials, they're all saying the same thing. They're all saying we got less bleeding, we got the same amount of thromboembolic events. I'm thinking this really is game time ready. This is ready to be used before the guidelines get there. And trust me, the guidelines are coming down with this. And I only know the guidelines are coming down with this because people way smarter than me are saying the guidelines are going to be changed. And those way smarter people than me are the people that write the guidelines. So I'm pretty sure the guidelines will be changed. Don't worry about that. But you heard it here first on Questioning Medicine 2017. So until next time. Again, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter @AndrewBilt. You can email me, AndrewBilt@gmail.com. You can email the Questioning Medicine, questioningmedicine@gmail.com. Let me know your thoughts. Let me know what you're thinking. I'll always respond. It may not be within the first hour. It may not even be within the first 24 hours, but I will always respond to your questions and your comments and your concerns. So until next time, I'm going to end this podcast like I've ended every podcast before it. Until next time, keep the quest in questioning. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters!